The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. Just approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Friday. It's the 10th of February, 2023, and I hope you're very well indeed. I'll introduce our Friday panel to you very shortly, but we want you involved in the conversation, of course. Your WhatsApps and texts come in to us on 086 60 25000. Give us a call on 07491 25000, or hop on to your smart TV, your Fire Stick, open up the YouTube app or the Facebook Watch app and watch us on our social media there or directly on our website. Okay, let's say good morning to our guests. We'll start with Maria Walsh, Fine Gael MEP for Midlands Northwest. Maria, lovely to see you again. How are you keeping?
Good, thank you very much for having me on.
And it's great. Friday. It's great to have you with us. Leonard Watson, owner of Watson's Menswear and member of Letterkenny Chamber. Good morning, Leonard.
Morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us again. And Mary T. McBride, Defective Blocks campaigner, human rights and global development consultant. Great to have you on the programme. Mary T, how are you keeping?
I'm keeping well, Greg. Thanks. It's great to be back again.
Good stuff. It's great to have you back. Okay, we've quite a bit to get through, so we won't dwell too long on some of these. I shall ask you first, Leonard, for no good reason. Former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern, in other words, no loaded reason, sorry, there's always a good reason to talk to you. Former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern has rejoined Fianna Fáil 11 years after resigning from the party, that following the report of the Mahon Tribunal. Fianna Fáil spokesperson said last night that it received a membership application from Mr. Ahern, and this has been accepted by his party. Of course, this comes ahead of the anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, and he's got no intention to run for his old job. He's not ruling himself out. He seems obsessed whether he's going to live till 2025. For every comment seems to be, if I'm still alive, we'll see. But anyway, he probably has an eye on the presidency, and the people will have their say at that time. Does it really matter? Is this not an internal Fianna Fáil matter? A lot of people seem quite vexed by this. Should we be, Leonard?
Sure, Greg, I'd say it is a decisive. There's certain people out there would find this very troubling that, you know, the guy paid 20 euros to rejoin a party. As you say, does he have his eye in the presidency? Maybe he does. But if the people would decide not, like he is, he's a decisive figure. Like, for all the good that he did in the peace process and that, there was parts of his life that was troubling, we could say. Like, his financials weren't just the cleanest. And but again, I would still say, is he a good figure maybe to have around now at the moment? I heard Leo Varadkar saying yesterday that he would talk to him from time to time about the peace process. And, you know, it's good to have that knowledge of maybe people who were in the room 25 years ago. And, you know, how did they play it out? And how did they, you know, at the end of the day, we all want peace in the North. We want to get a government back in there. Like, so I don't know. I think it's an often story at the moment. Like, you know, and again, if he does run for the presidency, the people will decide. Like,
yeah, but he's been very active, of course, over the last 10 years. He's involved in numerous meetings. He's been all over the North, many border counties. People very interested to see what he has to say about developing peace. You think he has a role to play in that?
I actually think he does, Greg. No different to maybe John Bruton. And a lot of the people that were there at the time, you know, they've all knowledge from what went on, and maybe, you know, things that they got caught up on, and maybe how they got through it. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about talking and getting these things sorted. So, like, Bertie was a great communicator, in fairness to him. Like, so, and that end, I think he's something to give here in this here process. Like.
Yep, and I said develop a peace, I meant developing relations in the North and getting things back together. That's what I intended to say. Maria Walsh, what do you think?
I think
I want you to say what was in your mind just before you decided how you could phrase it a different way.
To be honest with you, listen, I a part of me fully agrees with Leonard and what the media is covering in terms of his historical legacy towards in the rooms and making broker deals around peace. I think his experience is certainly welcomed and necessary. Do I think, as we are suffering from a shortage in women in national politics and politics overall, do I think we should be talking about a man who does not have a positive legacy, certainly towards my generation? Absolutely not. I think I would have much preferred to see Bertie supporting a headline saying former Taoiseach supporting a local candidate or a European candidate or a national candidate to get into politics and show her the ropes. That's what I prefer to be.
So in other words, rather than a changing of the guard, it's a returning of the guard sort of a thing.
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, I asked this question to a few of my friends because we are the generation, sadly, that and I don't think any, I think probably most of your listeners have family members right dotted around the world because of the 2007, 2008 financial crash. I think his legacy is positive in one sense. My generation, I don't think, can forgive and forget.
Unfortunately, though, there's a new generation of
absolutely
people who are leaving the country, and that legacy is being written right now for a current crop of politicians.
Yeah, absolutely, and I mean, I'm not going to hide away from that either. I got into politics to make impact and change, just as well as many in various political parties who are a younger generation because of what we learned and what we experienced in the financial crash. And that doesn't mean I'm making excuses for this current now, but I don't know. I wasn't happy when I seen the news yesterday, and I know my party leader and Taoiseach Leo Varadkar said it is a Fianna Fáil issue, and that's their house to clean up. But I certainly wasn't enthused or enjoyed reading headlines such as that.
And indeed, Leo Varadkar has softened his cough a little bit in terms of his comments. But time passes, though, and as I said on the show yesterday, maybe there has to be pace. Space for people to serve their time and to come back. I mean, as I said yesterday, that's the whole judiciary is built on that basis. But maybe in elected politics, some stuff can be too much. I'm not sure you really look at politics in this way, Maria. But I mean, obviously, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael now are linked. Do you know what I mean? They've been in power for quite some time. Do you believe that this could reflect poorly on your party, that your party is in coalition with another party that has welcomed Bertie Ahern back into the ranks?
No, I don't think so. I'm sure my Fine Gael colleagues, who, as I mentioned earlier, you know, got into politics after the financial crash, might have something similar to say, like I have. But I don't think it's going to reflect badly on us. I certainly. I don't think it will, because if it did, or we were encouraged to say something different, or asked to say something different, like perhaps another political party, and keep the line, you know, that's not the way we do our party business either. And I think ultimately, it's Fianna Fáil's issue to look at and deal with, and as we move forward, as all the comments and the events and the anniversaries and hopefully more celebrations in terms of retaining peace on the island of Ireland. Bertie will be at the core of that, no doubt.
And has been, again, as well, just to be absolutely fair.
Absolutely. He's been around for 10 years. Yeah.
And he has been present in a lot of the things that we talk of, you know, that have already happened. Mary T, what's your feelings?
Yeah, I mean, for me, Greg, I think what's important for us to kind of is to give a bit of context to this, and the fact that we're in a period of great debate on ethics and standards in public office at the moment. I think trying to rehabilitate a political figure with, I know Leonard said it was troubling. I would find it a stronger word for it when a tribunal finds that
Leonard's just warming up. Don't worry, he'll get tougher as the hour wears on.
And truthful, you know, regarding, I can't remember, was it 160,000 punt at the time linked to his accounts? And I suppose, you know, whether it's Bertie or Robert Troy of Fianna Fáil or Pascal O'Donoghue or Damien English of Fine Gael, regardless of party, you know, your party, I don't think we should be rewarding that type of behaviour by bringing someone back into the fold and potentially having a, although not very powerful and more maybe symbolic, but representing our country. I just think that sends a really dangerous message out personally. And I think people are tired of it.
So do you think there'll be a blowback for Fianna Fáil in this decision, that maybe they're not reading the room correctly? Because, of course, he would be held for the most part within Fianna Fáil. And I want to recognise this in very high esteem. I'm sure, and I'm not sure it's quite as divisive within the party as other issues might be. So, you know, I want to recognise there's an awful lot of people that think that this is his rightful return as well. But do you think nationally, and you know, obviously the whole population isn't Fianna Fáil, that this will play badly for the party?
I do actually. I mean, I suppose it's very difficult to get a sense of it. You know, there's no polling on it yet or that. But if you look at sort of reactions on social media, which I know can be a bit of an echo chamber and that, but, you know, there seems to be a lot of backlash about this. You know, the fact that they're welcoming him back and the idea that he could potentially represent the country. I honestly think they could be carefully reconsidering it, although you have the likes of Conor Lenehan going out. They're doing a charm offensive about it, saying, you know, he is held in, you know, high regard publicly. And obviously they timed his comeback to coincide with the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. So I imagine they'd be reconsidering it, but who knows, you know?
Yeah. Leonard?
No, listen, Craig, I'm not disagreeing with anything, but I would still say he's held in high regard throughout the world, like an American out there. And if he has a part to play in the next year or so, maybe trying to get the devolved government back up, I think let him at it. You know, Mary T's chatting about there, you know, he could be representing our country. Well, unless the people vote him in, he won't be representing our country, like so. Can I see him going for the presidency? I actually don't. I don't think he'll go for it.
Yeah, I think anywhere he appears, though, he would be seen as representing Ireland. If he was invited to a function in France, he would be viewed over there as a representative of the country. Mm-hmm. But I do take your point. Mary T made an interesting comment there in terms of, you know, the echo chambers and reading the room or reading public opinion. I mean, from your perspective, if you want to know what's what, where would you look? Do you know, because like Bertie Ahern, it's like everything now, and I don't want to sound like a scratched record, but invariably I do as soon as I just say that. But, you know, like, you're going to be pro-Bertie or anti-Bertie. I don't think, you know, and we probably won't hear from those that are indifferent because they'll just let it wash over them. So from a political perspective, where is the space that you look at to see what maybe what the majority of the country thinks on something?
Well, I mean, MySpace, Mary T made a valid point in terms of the Twitter machine is just a very small percentage and often a large minority. So for me, I get my news from good news sources like people out and about and those. I'm in Athlone today. I head to Moat. So in the Midlands of the country, and really get a pace for what they feel. I'd be surprised, though, because I'm out today speaking on mental health more so and meeting with different organisations on the ground. So I'd be interested to see, maybe ask me in a couple of hours, whether Bertie's name appears. It seems like it's a certain generation that perhaps will continuously bring up his name. But for me, and rightly so, Mary T's point that social media gives a slanted view. Interesting on the news, though, last night, where a lot of his own supporters were out and very happy that he was back. And as I said, it's a Fianna Fáil matter. And to Leonard's point, the people will decide in 2025 if he puts his name in the ring and ultimately who is the best candidate to lead us at a national and an international stage. In the Oris as president. I certainly won't be found canvassing for him, but maybe because of political lines and issues of the past.
But there's a voting pact, though, isn't there, between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael?
What, no, not from my understanding, Mary T.
Well, Leo announced it there, I believe, if I'm not incorrect, Greg.
We'll have to have a look at that. That's that's something.
General election, yeah.
First, I heard.
I read it in the news. I read it in newspapers. It was Christmas. Yeah.
Is this on the presidential election?
No, for the next general. So you might.
No, might be strategies. No, I get where you're coming from. Okay. Well, I think that has yet to play out, really, because we have to see which way the wind's blown closer to that. Yeah. But I'm sure everyone's leaving their options open indeed. A caller says, I'm disgusted but not surprised. 2008 crash destroyed people's lives. And he's everything that they say is kind of. I won't read exactly what they're saying, but it's sort of. I'm not a Fianna Fáil supporter, but if he's back, let him back. We can't blame the government for everything. The crash was caused by our own greed. Young people's capacity to solve problems is limited. That's what one listener thinks there. I vote Sinn Féin, but I'd rather have two Berties than what we have right now. He did so much for the country in terms of peace. Okay, well, and as I say, there are lots of views, and what we want to hear is all different types of views on this programme. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Quick word on this one, too. The European Union leaders have said they would tighten their borders, with some seeking more fences and walls, while others would rather spend the money on improving living conditions in worst-off parts of the world. Ireland, the Netherlands, Belgium, Austria and Denmark were among the 27 national leaders meeting in Brussels to express concern about increasing irregular arrivals, with some 330,000 border crossings recorded last year. And it's kind of seems to be a bit of a toughening of the stance in Ireland on this matter. Marie, obviously, as a Fine Gael MEP, or as an MEP, sorry, what is happening here? What are they talking about here? I mean, you know, people will instantly think maybe they're talking about the amount of people that would be coming into Ireland as, you know, not necessarily as part of our commitment to the situation in the Ukraine, but from other parts of the world. Is that what they're trying to address here? Because what we're seeing in Ireland at the moment is being seen in many countries across Europe.
Yeah, for multiple years, and for your listeners in case, we at a European level, we do not have a strong enough or a coordinated approach to migration. And migration is widespread. It's the movement of people who are in dire need of protection. We have climate refugees and asylums. We also have those who are being trafficked. Children being smuggled, search and rescue in which we see on the Mediterranean and multiple other areas of sea. So it's a wide encompassing, and we simply do not have a coordinated approach. We have some countries on the Eastern Bloc, and they often get named in terms of Poland and Hungary and Czech Republic, who are quite strict on how they and what numbers of people they welcome into their country. Given we're the most west periphery, it's based off the percentage of what your population and your country size. So you'll see Germany and France take, I think Germany in the height of 2014 took well over a million refugees. And it's a case of more and more people are coming. And if they do, how are they being, I hate to use the word process because I think that's inhumane, but
their application is being processed, not them as individuals. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. And I think that's, and as people move, I think as we see what's happening in Turkey and Syria in terms of, the earthquake, when we see individuals from African countries and South Africa move through and essentially looking for a safe place to call home. We just do not have enough coordinated effort, and we have a number of countries blocking. I have to say Ireland has always been at the forefront in terms of welcoming in the people that need home. And to everybody's point, I think it's been discussed on this show multiple times, do we have enough space and capacity? We're absolutely at a squeeze, but I do think that doesn't remove us from our international obligations in terms of giving a safe place for people.
There's multiple international obligations, such as a refugee arriving in one country. That country, if I understand it correctly, is supposed to deal with them. But what we're seeing is a lot of refugees arriving in Ireland from countries where there aren't direct flights from, for example.
Yeah, so we have people who would come into the first country, first safe space, and then often what is happening or what has happened is if they have a family member or friend in another country that they are either moved to or take their own mode of transport to that country. There is issues with individuals coming in illegally across every country, not just in the European Union, not just in Ireland. And to the Taoiseach's point, he did an interview yesterday in Brussels, and it was a case of being fair to those who need protection and to be hard on those who perhaps do not need a safe space.
Do you feel
and are not fleeing and need to be returned back to the country?
Do you feel this could be characterized, though, as the government hardening its approach you know, maybe off the back off the back of protests that we're seeing around the country?
Absolutely not. No, I think as a country, that's not us. And I think something previously said, the loud minority is taking over airwaves and getting coverage on press, but certainly not a reflection to this country and not a reflection of the government. And I think it's fair to say for any representative, regardless of the political party, it is not. There is a narrative, though, coming from some countries in Europe around fences, walls, and this Trumpian nonsense. And I haven't seen it, and I would be very surprised if it would come from any representative in Leinster House, and right. certainly as Irish representatives in the European Parliament.
All right, Mary T, would you welcome European leaders looking at tightening the borders? I mean, obviously, in terms of I think fencing and walls is probably nonsense, really. I don't think we'll ever see that.
I think what's important to remember is that no one's illegal, and seeking asylum is a recognised right. And so I agree with Maria, and I think it is positive that hopefully there is a push for more of a coordinated approach at EU level, because that is certainly needed, and would, you know, sort of address, I suppose, the, you know, planning, the better planning, I suppose, for, you know, allocation of refugees across the EU. But I think at the same time, we also need a coordinated approach in Ireland to dealing with, you know, immigration at the moment and refugees and asylum seekers. We don't have an all of government approach. You have, you know, Roderick O'Gorman, who's being, you know, ad hoc every so often sending out requests for, OK, we need more hotels, we need this. It's just, you know, in the midst of a housing crisis already, it beggars belief that we're still in this situation where, you know, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Green Party cannot get it together to come up with a coordinated whole of government approach to dealing
with. In fairness, though, we haven't seen really any solutions coming from the opposition either. I think it has to be said at this point. I mean, if there were a blueprint that was on offer post next general election, you know, we don't really know how any party or non-party person might propose to deal with all of the issues which are interconnected.
Well, I wouldn't say that's completely true. I remember watching there last week, there a staggering figure from Rosemary Conway Walsh of Sinn Féin saying that, you know, why aren't we looking properly? And this has been said for over a year now since the Ukrainian war started. Why aren't we looking at holiday homes? There are so many vacant holiday homes. She said 10,000 in Mayo alone was the figure. And all of the derelict buildings that are, you know, around.
Well, it would have been very interested if the millions upon millions of euros that were pumped into a limited enough number of individuals and into hotel accommodation, whatever, if that actually had been distributed, you know, in other words, people had been given more of an incentive to give up some of their property or a holiday home, it'd be very interesting to see where we are at now, because we know in Donegal very few people were taken up on offers of their property, because instead they were being pumped into you know, overcrowded rooms, hotels, not really suitable accommodation. So, you know, I think a lot of mistakes were made some time back. And just before I bring Leonard in, right, because Leo Varadkar's talking about illegal immigrants. Not sorry, he's talking about people traffickers. And then they're also talking about people coming in from outside Europe on an irregular basis. Who were they talking about, really, from your perspective, Mary T? You know, because as you say, everyone's entitled to seek asylum. Is that what you said? So who, I mean, is there a group of individuals here that they're skirting around talking about? Because I would like to know what exactly they're talking about.
Exactly, Greg. That's a really good question. And I also had the very same question myself, because, you know, what does, I mean, irregular mean? Someone fleeing war, someone fleeing persecution, the impacts of climate change and famine.
I mean, they're not arriving into Ireland on blow-up dinghies, so I don't know, you know what I mean? So maybe that language kind of would fit in with what we've heard from Downing Street from time to time, but I don't know who Leonard, I'm going to bring you right in now, but just in case Maria has an insight this from a European perspective, who are they actually talking about?
I think they must be chatting with people who come from safe countries. Like you say, there's a narrative come out of the UK, is it Bulgaria, that 20,000, 30,000 have landed from Bulgaria. you know, seeking asylum in the UK. Like, from my perspective, I just think that all governments have been caught in the back foot. Like, even in Ireland in the last year and a half, 70,000-80,000 people come in. You know, how do you actually get living accommodation for that kind of numbers? I just think the government have been caught on the back foot, as on the fact that Donegal, you have 6,000 or 7,000 people being accommodated in Donegal, which, you know, that's fine. And then you go to places like counties around Dublin, 1,900 people. You know, we have 1,400 children here in national school. That's 10% of the population that has come into the country. Like, you know, they need to start, you know, coordinate up around the country. It's very easy, as just as you said, you have certain people providing accommodation in certain areas and making money off it, Greg, and just push them all that way. There's no coordination here at all. Like, you know, to make it fair around the country. Like, you know, we all have our duty to help these people, but I just think it should be done in a fair way. Like.
Yeah, Maria, who are these people they're talking of?
Well, to Leonard's point, from my work in the European Parliament on the Fundamental Rights Committee, what we often look at in areas of migration is those that are not in countries of war-torn conflicts, or are not under persecution, and are just looking for a better way of life. Exactly as thousands of Irish have done for generations, and cities like Boston didn't turn away thousands of others based off geographic size either. So I think there is a coordinated effort, an issue, and much joint up thinking needed. I agree with both on that, but I also think when movements of people are coming in. It's very in multiple wars, not just the war against Ukraine, not just the humanitarian crisis that we see in Turkey and Syria right now, but they also create impact too as people arrive, and we need to put people and move people safely and securely with their families if they arrive with them, and. On the positive, though, I must say, you know, I spoke to many teachers at national school level who are only delighted that people have moved in.
A lot of schools have been saved by that.
Exactly. So there's pros and cons to all. I fundamentally think, though, the issue is we simply are not communicating effectively. And we're not having conversations with communities. And that's something I think we certainly need to address. And I say that as a Fine Gael representative and as a European Parliament representative, because Ireland that's impacting.
In terms of communicating, would you be in favour of consultation?
Well, if we can call it whatever we want, a consultation, openness, dialogue, looking at different cultures, and then also being real about, as I just mentioned, in terms of school numbers have increased, teachers have been more secure in terms of numbers. We have skill shortages in terms of local small businesses that are needing support. So I think there's a lot of pros and cons to everything, yep. And ultimately the fundamental piece of keeping people safe and welcoming and reducing the small minority that is very, very loud.
But Marity,
something that I think we should all echo and be proud of, that we're welcoming people into our country.
I do. And Marity, I have to mention the elephant in the room before we move on here. And Maria quite rightly points out, you know, people should feel welcomed and safe. But, you know, there's an awful lot of people in this county and in this country that don't feel safe where they are either. And I think that is always going to complicate this country's response to everything, because there's an awful lot of people, and not least here in Donegal, that don't have somewhere safe to live, that don't feel safe in their homes, that can't get accommodation themselves. And I don't know how you're ever going to message this in a way that makes them feel any better about their situations.
Well, I think, you know, remember last week there was big discussion about this with regards to, you know, what provides a fertile kind of breeding ground for, let's say, far right or for discontent. But specifically, I think you're referring to the defective concrete crisis in Donegal. You know, and we have to remember we've upwards of 7,000 homes that, you know, are in various stages of decay. Because of light touch no regulation for decades. And, you know, the situation there is we've families trapped in very dangerous, unsafe homes with nowhere to go because, you know, there's nothing to rent. Anything that's been available has now, as we know, been taken over to respond, and rightly so, to the Ukrainian refugee crisis. But again, you know, the anger shouldn't be directed towards, you know, people fleeing conflict. Because at the same time, Greg, as you know, we heard just this week that the Donegal County Council are refusing to even approach the Department of Housing to propose that they could take on a modular home scheme to try as a solution to try and rehome families affected by defective concrete. So, you know, for me, you need to kind of look at where you need to apportion blame in all of this. The resourcing issue has not to do with a refugee, you know, entering this country and seeking safety. It is absolutely with our government. You know, they're time and time again, they're failing people, they're failing refugees as well. Because let's not forget, you know, we have an apartheid system, for want of a better word, in terms of how we treat refugees coming into this country. And it seems to be on the basis of your color of your skin or your country of origin, which is appalling. So they're, you know, desperately failing refugees, some of which, as we've seen as well, have been forced to sleep in tents and make their own encampments and then have been attacked. And then at the same time, you have defective concrete homeowners who are failed by the government again. So,
yep.
It's very easy to kind of...
it's easier to blame, perhaps, refugees than it is the decision makers, is it?
Yes, exactly. Okay. It's absolutely the decision makers. We have the solutions, you know, just implement them.
Leonard?
Look, I'm kind of going to contradict Marty. I know what you're saying, Marty, but you said there about thousands of holiday homes. What are we going to do with these holiday homes when it comes to June and July, when these owners come back? I agree that the government needs to get ahead of this. I agree on the MICA thing. You know, hopefully in the next year or so, we're going to have hundreds of families getting their houses rebuilt. These people need somewhere to live. Rents have doubled in around certain parts of Donegal, which is just, it's not sustainable. But to just say that there should be a solution, you can't bring 80 or 90,000 people into your country and just home them straight away.
But Leonard, just to that, and I'm not cutting across you or contradicting you, we have a population in excess of 5 million, right? I'm not great in percentages. 70,000 people, if we use that number, you know, what is it, between 1% and 2%, something like that there? I mean, it doesn't say an awful lot for what we had or our infrastructure or our planning if, you know, an extra 2% can cause all of these problems. I mean, that, you know, it's a very small amount of people. But relative to the overall population.
Storm too, like, you know, since COVID, building has just stopped. The cost of building has gone through the roof. Like, it's just not viable for some people to build houses now. Like, you know, it's, and after the crash, just everything just stopped. We've been just caught in a perfect storm. That's not an excuse to say we shouldn't be able to house these people. Like, but we have a storm coming in Donegal in the next couple of years. You know, we're going to need hundreds of houses for families, like, just so they can move out and get their house rebuilt. And that's what I'm on about, Greg, about the fairness, about moving people around the county. You know, we have now, I think, something 7,000 asylum seekers in the county. You know, and you have other counties that are probably more wealthy than Donegal, probably in better shape, and they've a third of that number, like, you know.
Yeah, but I don't think we're taking any more in at the moment. I think it's been accepted that in terms of our services that Donegal is at capacity. A caller says, the Irish have worked and helped to build any country they immigrated to in the past and continue to do so. They also contributed to the economy of that country by paying rent and spending their money in the country. And I could go on and on and on. I respect everyone's point of view, but I also want to recognise the fact that the war on Ukraine, that 1 in 10 people in Donegal, 10% of the population, are not Irish. They're here working, contributing, working in the health service. 15% around the country are not Irish. They've always been here. They're working in many different types of job, providing vital services. We're talking as if, like, we were just, you know, this homogenous group of people up until about, you know, 12 months ago. We have, in this county alone, 15,000 people doing exactly what the young people leaving and going to Australia are doing now. They're over there, living there, working there, making their lives there. This is, as I say, pre-war, Maria. I think we need to recognise that and recognise the fact that 1 in 10 people listening to this show may well be not Irish and feel like they're going, well, hold on a second. I've been part of this community for 20, 30 years or whatever it might be, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've a really proud tradition of the coin, the Cead Níl a Fáilte, and people have called. I think that's probably one of our greatest success stories of joining the EU 50 years ago, that our country has developed and grown, and Ireland Inc. has welcomed in not just Europeans but further afield, and people have called the likes of Donegal the most west periphery of our European Union home. I do take the point from both Mary T and Leonard. There needs to be a coordinated approach. We absolutely need movement and a positive 100% redress system for families affected by the defected block scandal, and that's what it is. But that absolutely cannot also take away from, to your Greg's point, that people are calling Ireland their home, and I hope they continue to do so, and that they don't hear that loud minority online or through the deep dark web of other channels and think Ireland is not a welcoming space, because that's certainly not where we are, and I would hope many of your listeners would also agree with that.
Our guest today, and I should mention this more regularly, I normally do, Maria Walsh, Fine Gael MEP for Midlands North West, Mary T McBride, Defective Blocks campaigner, human rights and global development consultant, and Leonard Watson, owner of Watson's Menswear and member of Letterkenny Chamber. And we hear you in other capacities as well, Leonard, a very important voice in the region, I believe. We really should be speaking about this for very much longer, but just maybe to start the conversation and be conscious that we have to have it, I suppose, in the right way too. But I would be very concerned, and I've expressed it on the show, and want to know what we can do, either as a programme, as a station, or as a society, to tackle, which has been referenced by both the coroner and on Garda Síochána, the level of suicide in this county. And I have to say too, particularly amongst young people, I know far too many people, or once or twice removed, who have taken their lives in recent times. Leonard Watson, as I say, you know, we have to be, I'm conscious that I don't want to trigger anyone who's not in a good place at the moment, and we'll have some information a little later on that we hope people will avail of if they do feel like that. But we're going to have to come up with something coordinated, I think, to treat this like the... I don't want to put a word on it, but there's an awful lot happening, and it's not anecdotal. It's the information is there, and we're going to... It's worrying. It's very, very, very worrying to me.
You know what, Greg? You're right. Unfortunately, we all know too many people that, for some reason or other, have decided that they just want to take their life, and it's... It's an awful thing to think that you're in that space where you think there's no alternative. It's getting people into a space where they see there is an alternative. Like, you know, I remember chatting to a guy a couple of years ago who would have had a serious drink problem. Like, but he got out through the other side. He's very successful now. And like I said to him, you're the kind of person you should be sending through schools. You know, you were the guy that was at his lowest ebb but came back. You know, it's neat to show these people that there is an alternative, you know, that there's people out there that can help them. You know, groups like AA, groups like Pieta House, and that, you know, for years they're saying that young men didn't talk, they wouldn't talk about their troubles, and I would always say the few of the people that I would have known that maybe took their lives, they were the happiest person in the room when you went into that room. They were the life and soul of the party, and that was the scary part, where you never seen it coming. Like, so as you say, Greg, we need to get to a space where people feel there's help there for them, and that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And should that be around mental health services? Like, you know, I would be very critical of that too. I don't think the services are updated. You're hearing people about going into the service, and after a day or two, being put back out of the service. You know, and just, you know, once they tell a doctor, "Oh, I feel okay," that's okay, and that's not okay. Like, you know, it's very, very easy just to say, well, they said they're okay. I always remember a priest telling me a story, Greg, one time, where a mother rang him and begged him to ring the hospital to get him to keep her son in. And the priest rang the hospital, and the nurse said he was Japanese. She says, yeah, I know what you're saying, but there's nothing I can do. He's told the doctor he's okay. 3 days later, that young man took his life, like, and that's not good. It's not good enough, like.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there are serious gaps, right? But we have had, I don't think we've ever had any more support groups. I don't think we've had any more awareness and conversation in our schools. Yet we are seeing record numbers of young people presenting with mental health problems, self-harming. And still, even though we talk about it, right, it continues to happen, and it's happening in greater numbers now. Mary T, I don't know if we need to rip up the approach, not in terms of the services or what have you, and relook at how we're dealing with this, because, as I say, this, and I'm open to correction on this, but I don't recall there ever being as much in terms of, you know, first port of call supports in the schools, people being supported in schools, right? Some great policies in schools. And as I say, we've saw statistics recently that an awful lot of people are still suffering greatly with their mental health. So I don't know, I just feel we maybe need to retain what we have, but start at the beginning as to what's happening here.
Well, I will actually contradict you, Greg, if you don't mind. But, you know, we just have to kind of look at, give a bit of context. So in Ireland, we're, and Maria will know this, and we are consistently among the highest in Europe when it comes to youth suicide. You know, we're always in the top 10. Other countries have, you know, improved their numbers over the years, but we just seem to remain the same. And then let's not forget, it was just this morning that the United Nations Child Rights Committee has said it's seriously concerned, quote unquote, by Ireland's lack of and inadequate mental health services for children, noting that some of them are waiting for over a year. You know, a year is a long time for anyone, including an adult, to, you know, wait for desperately needed mental health support, you know, early intervention like talking therapies and that. But for a child, that's a lifetime. I mean, it's just cruel. So I would disagree.
The gaps that I talked of were in terms of the gaps that I was referencing, and you know much more about this than I, were the supports, right? But I was trying to choose my words so as to not to discourage someone who feels that they need help seeking help in the first instance, okay?
Absolutely.
So that's what
and
I was trying to avoid. But I know in schools there's an awful lot of work being done to have a conversation. But I understand exactly where you're coming from, and maybe we need to be a little bit more frank in the conversation. So continue your point there, Mary T, please.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There are great services out there. And, you know, even just thinking about big mental health crisis we have here in Donegal is again linked to the whole MICA issue and defective concrete homeowners. Remember, was it at the end of 2021, the MICA Action Group did a survey of homeowners. And I mean, it was just staggering. 96% had reported that they had, you know, what they would consider good mental health prior to discovering that they had defective concrete in their home. And afterwards, 84% now have mental health issues, with 25% suffering from depression. And they're, you know, through IFAN, you know, Initial and Development Partnership and that, and DLDC, they have put out supports, mental health supports. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, they are there for people to reach out and that and others. But I just think there needs to be more resourcing, you know?
Okay.
More of them, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Maria Walsh, I know this is something you're passionate about, and you're even speaking about it this morning. The time got away, I mean, this one, but I want to return to this one in a more meaningful way, as we always do, but just particularly, what's your views, though, for the last few moments that we have, the last few minutes? There's no panic on you, just say whatever you want to say, Mary.
Yeah, no, and I want to acknowledge, because you are a great champion of breaking down the stigma and discrimination around mental health, so I want to give credit to you, Greg, because you're always choosing your words and making sure people are safe in their home listening to you, and I think that's incredibly important. I think to both Leonard's and Mary T's point, you asked for a word earlier on, and I think we're in a silent pandemic when it comes to mental health, and we have been for generations. It's not just in the last months or years, it's generations. Death by suicide is our second leading cause of death for young people across Europe. And ultimately where I would see and want to see this going is exactly how we treated COVID. We have expertise right across Europe, indeed across the world. We're so technology connected and driven that there's expertise that we can bring in, and we're failing. we're failing the generations to come. And when you look at, and I often have no problem taking swipes at my own lads and ladies when I need to, in terms of Fine Gael and government, I have called endless times for an increase of mental health spend. We're in and around 5 or 6%. We should be at 12%, like the WHO recommends. But there is an amazing resources, to your point, Greg, in Jigsaw, in Letterkenny, in a multitude of community groups, in schools that are doing well-being programs. So there's always a safe space to go and speak to somebody. But I think each and every one of us has an opportunity to upskill and reskill in our mental health training in terms of active listening. When you ask someone, how are we waiting for the answer? And that's just a basic necessity I think we need, but we certainly need to go to places like incentives to make sure people are looking at the mental health services as a career, and not just falling into it in a reactive measure because someone in their family unfortunately took their own life or suffered from depression or eating disorder, which we are seeing arise. So I want to make sure my few words are one of encouragement. There's a lot going on, both online and offline. There's so many places and spaces to go and seek support. So I just ask anybody listening today is listening tomorrow and the days ahead, and know that there's support there. And and actively, I think all four of us are in our own networks are making sure as much change can be called on and faster.
All right, we'll continue talking about that on this program, but so I want to come back to it in a long time format, and I'd be delighted if at least some of you could join in that conversation. Maria Walsh, as always, thank you very much for your time. Great to have you on the programme. And Mary T, quite rightly pointing out the gaps, and we all know people that have been waiting to access to CAMHS for 6-12 months. That is a huge part of it, and I fully recognise that, and your experience, your knowledge in this area. So thank you very much for your input. I really do appreciate it.
Right.
Take care of yourself, Mary Teresa McBride, and last but certainly not least, Leonard Watson, as always. Leonard, great to have you back. It's been a while. Take care of yourself.
Thanks very much, Greg.
All right, thank you very much indeed. All right.